This episode of Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Travel and Events Group, voted Best Tour and Transport Operator in the New South Wales Tourism Awards. If you want to know why they're award-winning, why not check out one of their great beer experiences, like their Highlander Tour, which takes you on a food and beer adventure of the Southern Highlands. This full-day tour showcases some of the quality beer, wine, mead and cider being made in the region today, and also includes a lunch featuring fresh local produce. Tours leave from Sydney, Canberra or Goulburn, and there's also a budget option for pickup in the Highlands itself. To book your tour today, visit daves.com.au.
Sessionable.
Hey everyone, it's Adrian. So the following episode is a Q&A with Dr. Pat from Lagunitas, and it's kind of like an informal live episode where a few audience members asked some questions. However, the audience members were not mic'd up. I've tried to boost up the audio in these bits, but if you're still having trouble hearing the questions, I've also transcribed them and they'll be available on the show notes. And the show notes are available on our website, which is sessionable.net. And the website also links to all of our social media feeds, and all our past episodes are available on there as well. And finally, if you like the show, please do rate and review us on iTunes. It really does help people find us and spread the word about the podcast. All right, I guess that's it. On with it. I'll kick things off. Welcome everyone to Sessionable. I'm Adrian, and I'm joined today by Dr. Pat from Lagunitas Brewing Company.
Oh, hello, thank you.
Welcome. And Pat, you're in the country to launch Lagunitas in Australia. How's that been going so far?
Day two. Actually doing very well. We have positive response. I could say almost better than expected. Yeah.
Awesome. So where have you been so far?
I was in Melbourne 2 weeks ago. We kind of coincide the Gabs in Melbourne, and we're coinciding the Gabs here in Sydney with out here preaching the gospel of good beer, so to speak.
Yep, sweet. Have you found Australia so far in terms of the beer scene, especially compared to the US?
It's cool. The Wellington, I think, is that's New Zealand, but I mean Melbourne is really, really cranking along, and I think Sydney is right behind it. You know, I'd say probably just me guessing personally, maybe like a year or two behind Melbourne, but from what I've seen, you know, it's coming on strong. Not as many multi-tap houses as Melbourne, but the beers are as good, yeah.
I think Sydney's always kind of catching up, but
right.
Yeah, we feel like we're doing some pretty good work here.
The beer's still good.
Yeah. So I guess part of you guys were bought out by Heineken a couple of years ago.
Last year.
Yep. And I guess part of that deal was, the idea of expanding globally. How have you found their kind of working with Heineken in terms of that so far?
It's actually been really, really cool. It was a little over a year ago, we had what we call a town hall meeting where our founder, Tony McGee, stood in front of the company and said, "Hey, I have an announcement to make." And Heineken, we're partnering with Heineken 50-50, and he described it as a partnership to see how we work together and about the distribution, how it would work for all. And then within 7 months, we had another meeting, and he said, "Good morning, everybody." He goes, "I have an announcement to make." I'm thinking, okay, we're getting a new fermenter or something. He goes, "Heineken has bought the brewery." And everybody in the meeting, you could see their eyes opened up. And myself, I thought, shit, I got to wear a polo and Dockers. But what he said was, "Here's what's changing." Nothing. It's like, well, something's got to change. He said, "We're going to have the same beer, the same recipes, the same people, the same fun marketing. The only thing changing is that we're going to have global distribution." You know, Heineken, family-owned brewery, has the best distribution, in my opinion, in the world with their lager, the Heineken brand. And now we're going to follow their distribution network with the Lagunitas IPA and our other brands eventually. It's going really well. And Heineken's is kind of cool is that they're kind of hands-off, actually. We're kind of, I look at it as almost like an entity. And verbatim, what I've heard is that Heineken said to Tony McGee, our founder, was like, "We don't want to take it over because if we do, we'll fuck it up." And Tony agreed with him. So it's been really cool that Heineken brings a lot to us too. You know, they bring efficiencies to the brewery, just the brew house, and absolutely distribution. I mean, we couldn't be in Australia today or Belgium or France by ourselves. We couldn't figure that out. You know, we went on our own, and it was in 2011, 2012. Tony sent two folks to the UK to try out our to try selling our beer. And in just a couple of years, two guys from Lagunitas with a small distributor, we got 200 tap handles. Then we went to Scotland. We went to Ireland. We had been in Sweden, but we did this proudly all by ourselves. And he really felt that the world was ready for a California IPA. It's already been bootlegged there. It's been gray marketed. We've had the beer go around the world, and it's just awful because it's mishandled, it's warm, and they don't take care of it. So it kind of frustrated him. So he felt that there was going to be the next wave of American beers was going to hit the shores around the world, and he wanted to be running up that hill when those beers hit, so to speak. So he knocked on Heineken's door. Heineken did not come to us, which is pretty ballsy and cool, and it's worked out extremely well. And a lot of people have a stigma with Heineken, but we feel very lucky in breweries our size, whether it's, you know, Sierra Nevada, New Belgium, or Sam Adams. I really think they would love to have the partnership that we do have with Heineken.
Awesome. And you mentioned to me earlier that you're now in 50 states in the U.S. and, what, 14 countries worldwide?
Yeah, we've been in 50 states for a few years now, and then, yeah, 14 countries now.
What's been more difficult, the international expansion or expansion within the U.S.?
All of it. It's all growth. I mean, it's each state or city or county and country has their own, you know, roadblocks and then, you know, highways to jump on and grow.
Cool. Now, does anyone have any questions at the moment for Dr. Pat?
Yeah, I'd like to know how, I mean, I don't really know the history of this beer, the IPA, your IPA. How long has that been available in the US for? Has the recipe changed over the years?
So, thanks. Tony, the founder, I'll kind of start from the beginning, I'll lead up to it. So, 1993, he was home brewing on his stove. And after 10 batches of homebrew, if you guys have been homebrewed or you have friends that do, you know, the sweet wort always boils over and it goes all over the stove and your spouse or your friends yell at your roommates yell at you. So he had several batches of brew. Some were good, some were bad, but all the sweet wort was going into his stove. And on Thanksgiving Day, his wife, Carissa, was cooking a meal, turned on the stove and caught the insulation on the stove on fire and almost burned the kitchen down. So she kindly told him, Tony, I love you, but take your hobby somewhere else. So it was after 10 batches of homebrew, Tony decided to do this professionally. And I don't know of anything you do in life, of 10 of anything, you decide to do it professionally, let alone brew beer. So he read a book on The Joy of Home Brewing by Charlie Papazian, a book on the microbiology of yeast, which I don't understand. But he's a very intelligent man, and there's an old saying, if you don't know what you're doing, anything is possible. And that's kind of the story. So he started brewing, and he rented a little space, population 200, and started brewing beer. And this little, was a 7-barrel system he kind of wired together and started selling off the back of his pickup truck, selling up and down the coast of Marin while he had a full-time job selling print. So he sold a pale ale, a golden ale, a wheat ale, and a stout, and he named them after the accounts. Cinch Beach Pale Ale, Aluma Farmhouse Red Ale, and that was his way of getting in. So as time marched on, it's a long, long answer to your question, he started making the Lagunitas Pale Ale his flagship. It was called Dogtown Pale Ale, and if you see the logo, you see the dog everywhere. There's a little town called Dogtown on the coast of Marin County, population 28, 30, 27, depending on who's died or who's pregnant. It changes all the time. And so he called his first beer Dogtown Pale Ale, and he bottled it. And he had a bottling line made out of 2x4s and some filling tubes. But as he was selling the beer, the Dogtown Pale Ale, there's a brand called Sierra Nevada, which you're familiar with, and they, beautiful brewery, and they set the bar. They are the standard of Pale Ale in America, I believe they are. And it was really difficult to crack that because he would go into a bar and order a Pale Ale, and they would always pull Sierra. Even if he said a Dogtown Pale Ale, they would always pull Sierra. It's just this muscle memory. So Tony's 100th batch of beer he made, it was like his anniversary beer, he made a beer called IPA, and that's the beer you're tasting today. So he decided, you know what, the only way I can really up Sierra is by making IPA our flagship, which is very radical in its time, you know, in 1995, because back then it was Pale Ales were the big beers. Anchor Steam had their beer out, but all the other beers were Reds and Ambers and Goldens, nothing too radical. So when you presented the IPA to consumers, you know, this beer is only 54 IBUs, but still, at that time, it was like, whoa, it was a smack full of hops. It was bigger than Sierra. But that was how the IPA came about. He designed the label himself. He couldn't afford any graphic artist, and he designed it at Kinko's, which are print shops in America, and kind of cheated the time clock because he couldn't afford to do it. And that's how the IPA label came out. And he designed that the IPA with the kerning, the periods taken out. Specifically, when you walked into a bar, you would see that IPA jump out. You wouldn't have rainbows and rivers and all this pretty stuff when you're five deep at a bar. He designed it so you could stand back and see that. So the IPA is the same IPA since 1995. We've refined it as far as gotten better at brewing it, but it's the exact same recipe. And I think because it's a great recipe, and we were also the first, in the United States, we believe, to make it our flagship beer. We are now the leading IPA in the United States, and there's 6,000 IPAs. So it's a combination of both. So it's a beautiful beer. It's my favorite beer. It has a nice hop flavor, that hop bitterness, and has a nice sweet finish. And people that are hop heads enjoy it. People that are not in that category yet will still drink it and go, I don't like IPAs, but I really like yours. It's like, thank you. And if you want bigger beers, tonight we have the Maximus and the Hop Stupid, and we make some seasonals that are a little bit bigger for the hoppy people. So.
So shout out to the Royal Albert for hosting this event, by the way. And on tap as well, we have the Undercover Investigation Shutdown Ale. Could you tell us the story behind that?
That's a good story. So, this is Northern California, and we're very open. And not only does California and the area we have grow grapes and make great beers, it's a lot of good marijuana is grown there. And it's 2005, we would have parties at our brewery. I think it was the first Thursday of every month. We invite retailers and customers come out, and we were young, and we were very open, and we would smoke weed at the brewery. Unbeknownst to us, we had undercover agents for about 6 weeks show up at the brewery and try to buy weed from people that work there. Well, we don't sell weed. We sell beer, and we smoke weed. So they were a little confused. But no one ever sold any to them, but they were offered and said, hey, I'll smoke with you, or here's a bud, dude. It's California. And on March 17th, 2005, we were having a party at the brewery. People were playing Frisbee and backgammon, just out of control, And our sales manager / marketing manager at the time, Ron Lindebusch, he's still with the brewery, known as the Beer Weasel, and I also call him Smokey Ron. He had a joint about 12 inches long, and you get a joint 12 inches long from a sushi roller. So he lit it up, and he went to pass it, and he got linked, handcuffs on him. He thought it was a joke. Then another one, handcuffed behind him. He said, what's going on? Who are you? And they said, we're from the state. He said, the state of what? He said, the state of alcohol barrel control. He's like, uh-oh. Suddenly all these badges popped out. They surrounded the brewery and shut us down. And it's funny, Ron later looked at it and said, I knew they were fake hippies. Because the tie-dyes were too bright and the Birkenstocks were not broken in. So Tony, the founder, was not there at the time, and he showed up the next day and he heard about this and wound up getting an attorney. And we had a fight because they wanted to shut us down for a long period, and that would have shut down the brewery. So we were able to pick our suspension in February, and that was in 2006 when we were getting a new bonding line. And the undercover agent, it was 23-day suspension. The undercover agent showed up with our license, and he was all happy. Here's your license back. And Tony just ripped into him. You, rah, rah, rah. He goes, what are you trying to do, man? This is a small business. Look at our employees here. They have families. They have kids. They have kids in college. They pay rent, mortgage. What do you want to do, man? Just shut down breweries? Is this what you want to do with your life? What do you want to be? And the guy said, well, actually, he goes, what'd you want to be? He said, well, actually, I wanted to be an astronaut. Tony said, well, you fell a little short of that. So Tony was still very angry, so he decided to make an unrepentant beer. So he made this beer called, the original label was called Undercover Shutdown Investigation Ale, whatever, we're still here. So it was just this big knuckle sandwich, 10%, big malt bomb. And to this day, we release it every March to commemorate the March 17th, 2005 St. Paddy's Day Massacre.
Do we have any more questions from the floor?
You guys are just down the road from Russian River. You guys do much collab, or how well do you guys get along? Do you get along well? Do you share brews? Are you comrades or competitors or a bit of everything?
Bit of everything. No. Vinny is an amazing brewer. He's a friend. He's a friend of the breweries. We have parties at the breweries. We do a thing called Beer Circus. We have the Skunk Train, and we invite local breweries out. We don't collaborate with him. I mean, he is maxed out. We're maxed out. We did some collaborations with local breweries. We had some awful fires in California, so we collaborated with Moonlight Brewing, cool little brewery. They've been around a little longer than us, 27 years. And Vinny from Russian River also collaborated. But as far as collaborated with him, we've never done that. But, yeah, oh, we're absolutely friends. And he's actually – I was asked earlier what some of your favorite beers and because that comes out. Like North Coast Brewing, Imperial Stout, Old Rasputin is one of my favorites. I love Russian River's Blind Pig. I mean, those are just a couple of my favorites. But yeah, we get along just fine. He's a great person. Thank you.
So you're Northern California based originally, but you have, is it two or three breweries now throughout the U.S.?
We have two. It was 2011, 2012. We opened our second brewery in Chicago. That's Tony's hometown. We were shipping our beer across the United States, and between the cost of shipping and the environmental thumbprint, it was very bad. So we looked at the cost of shipping. It was X amount of dollars, and Tony said, well, with that, I think I could build another brewery. So he picked his hometown, Chicago, where he originally was born, and the second brewery's there, and it has two 250-barrel brew houses, which is huge. And in California, we have 250. We've never expected to be as big as we are. I've been with the brewery since 1998. And I thought, if we're in all of California, it's cool. Then we went into Oregon. Then we went to Washington. And then Tony said, hey, Pat, we're going to jump over to the United States, start selling beer in New York. So I sold beer in New York, in Massachusetts, and North Carolina. I had a big territory. But that's where, in America, you know, the big ideas, so to speak, come from: California and New York, and then the middle. It just kind of squashes in. But we had to fill those orders. So the beer that's going to the UK right now is from Chicago, and it fills Colorado to the East Coast. In California, we fill, west all the way to California to Colorado. And then the beer that you're drinking right now is from California. And what's really cool is that all our beer is cold shipped. It's a prerequisite. So a lot of distributors through the Heineken chain want to carry our beer, but they don't have cold storage because they're not educated, or they don't have beers that need cold storage. So the beer you're drinking right now is probably about 6 or 7 weeks old, and I think it's tasting really, really good. And so from the truck to the boat, the ship, and then to the distributor, it's cold. It's stored cold to the distributor, and that's why it holds up, because if you guys are all beer people, that, you know, if after 30 days the hops start to dissipate, lose aromatic, 60 days it starts losing. The beer's still fine, but it's not how the recipe was intended. And I'm really happy the way that the beer is held up and drink works. Thank you for seeing this through. And then they're proudly going to sell the beer around Australia. And I've had some other American beers. I won't mention who they are here, and they don't do cold storage. But we do.
Yeah, I think it's tasting pretty good. As you said, about 2 months old, and yeah, still holds up.
Yes, it tastes good. In the United States, generally, our distributors keep 60 days of inventory on the floor refrigerated. So in essence, if it's cold stored all the way through Australia here, you have the beer should taste the same it does in the United States. Of course, you're closer to the brewery, you know, it's going to taste fresher and all that, but it's holding up beautifully, man. Do you guys agree? Or thank you. Thanks. Yeah.
What are you drinking?
IPA. Yeah, IPA, yeah. And then our Maximus. So our Maximus, we're talking about beer. So Maximus is our IPA on steroids. That's our, in 1996, Tony took our IPA recipe and ramped it up 30%, hence the name Maximus. And people ask me, is that a double IPA? I'm like, no, it's our IPA on steroids. So we don't really describe it as a double IPA. It might be, I don't know. And then we made the hop stupid, because we wanted to make a big, stupid IPA. And they go, is that a triple IPA? No, I go, no, it's a big, stupid IPA. But if you think about it, you know, and we were doing this in the very early years, that there wasn't that category, and we kind of pushed that forward along with other small craft breweries. But we put it in the forefront, you know, through our marketing and through our sales team, and got it out there. And very proudly, I was with Tony 2 weeks ago at the Gabs in Millburn, and he was walking around, and I could see his face. I go, Tony, what do you think of all these breweries here in Australia? And, you know, there's 100 breweries selling the beers. And It's like, man, this reminds me of California, like in the year 2000. It's so cool. He goes, everyone has an IPA, everyone has a double IPA, you know, and it's exciting. It's really cool, man. And then a lot of them are called West Coast IPAs, and you got to kind of pinch yourself, us and other breweries that we kind of drove that. Yeah.
So you mentioned that Lagunitas IPA, number one selling IPA in the U.S. How you found, I guess, trying to keep that mantle of the top selling IPA amidst all the competition? I mean, I guess everyone is making IPAs. It's a pretty big market over there.
Yeah, someone told me there's in the United States there's 6,000 IPAs, but you know they're not all mass marketed. You know, the brew pubs. Going back to mentioned earlier, I think our beer is really approachable. Our IPA is really approachable. You know, and I think that's why we're the leading IPA. We have an amazing sales team that we've amassed in the United States, and then we have 200 salespeople across the United States, which is really not a lot for 50 states, but we do, and they have, you know, some help underneath that. But we just have a good team. But it's all about the beer, man. You know, we say beer speaks, people mumble, and I can talk all day, but it's the beer's good. I think the beer does it on its own.
Awesome. I guess that's a good note to kind of finish off this conversation. If you guys have any more questions. Yep, go.
I was just saying, if you're thinking of the increased distribution you're getting from Heineken and you're at full max on these two breweries, are you looking at building more, like increasing the size of the breweries in California and Chicago, or are you looking maybe at building a third?
So, thanks. We started building a third in LA, East LA. You know, going back 3 years ago, the craft brew industry in the United States is just jumping. We were growing by 25-30%. Then all of a sudden, in the United States, the market just kind of flattened out. So we've been building this brewery, and we have a 250-barrel brew house there, which we don't need yet. But, you know, as we grow into South America, we're starting to go into Mexico and further out, we'll need to flip it on. But what we built there also is a barrel room. So we're just doing barrel-aged beers, and we're going to have a tap room. It's going to open in the next few months, and we have a tap room above it, above the brewery, that's going to overlook the San Gabriel Mountains. It's a town called Azusa, California. So that will be, so to speak, so when we need it, we'll be able to flip a switch and open up a 250. It was announced on 420, April 20th, that we are opening a brewery in outside Amsterdam. It's an old Belgian brewery that our head brewer has been there the last 4 months, and he's been running IPA through it, and he said it's tasting spot on, and we're going to start selling that beer, distributing that beer to the UK. So that's going to take out that 5-week ship, and now it's going to be a 10-day ship. So the beer is going to be fresher tasting. It'll be cheaper for the retailer, consumer, and it's just going to all around be better. And will we build breweries around the world? I mean, I don't know. I would guess so. I mean, I'm getting old, but I would guess in 10 years there'll be some more breweries around. Yeah, but we're growing. And you had a question also?
I was just curious to find out the history.
So Lagunitas, it's a Spanish word. It means small lakes. And when the Spaniards arrived and they tried to conquer us, we kicked their ass, sent them back. But but they were able to name some towns. And so Lagunitas, it means small lakes. And if in the town of Lagunitas, a tiny town, there's Lake Lagunitas and some small lakes nearby. So Lagunitas, you know, now we're brewing in Petaluma, California. That's where we originally started, okay? But now we use Petaluma water, municipal water, and it's actually Russian River water. But originally, yeah, it was. So it's funny. So talk about the town of Lagunitas. When he was brewing there in a little rented space garage, I met him in 94. He was pouring all his wastewater down the drain, but he didn't realize that the town of Lagunitas, population 200, Forest Knolls, where he was at, it's on a septic tank, no blow-off valve. So the whole town backed up. It's kind of a shitty situation. And they kindly kicked him out, which was a blessing in disguise. He moved to Petaluma. So now we're in Sonoma County and using that, the Sonoma County water. You had another question?
Yeah, I was going to ask, as a sort of IPA pioneer, what do you think about New England IPA as a sort of beer at the moment? What's your take?
Personal question?
Both.
I'll just do the personal question. I don't like them. Because they don't taste like beer to me as much. It's just more like juice, but they're very popular And we did some. We do some beers called one hitters. We have regular seasonals, and we have a one hitter series where we'll make some one offs. And we made some New England IPAs, and they were a huge hit, and people like them. And hey, if people are gonna drink them. But me personally, no, that's just me. So most people do like them. So
just the beers in the bar that are gonna be available.
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah, so yeah, we're just going to launch the IPA to start. We've always done that in every market, even the United States, because as we describe it, it's that the IPA is that's who brought us to the dance, right? And so, even though you guys are beer consumers and beer advocates, most people in Australia do not know us. And if we roll out 8 different beers, it's just going to confuse people. And so the IPA. I would say next year, you know, we may see some seasonals and with some quarterly seasonals, and they'll all be pre-sold, and they'll be exciting and fun. But for right now, just IPA, and then eventually you'll see the seasonals come out. And it's worked around the world for us that way, and we'll continue doing that. So, you'll have some fun stuff. But tonight, you've got a good treat with some fun beers here, and I'll be at Gab's pouring some too. And if you guys are ever in the U.S., Petaluma or Chicago, I'm Pat, P-A-T, at Lagunitas.com. Please call me or email me, however that thing works. And fax my email. But please remind me that I met you, and I would love to give you a tour of the brewery and show you what we're doing there. It's really fun. It's exciting and cool. Hey, thanks so much for hanging out and drinking our beer, folks. And appreciate your time and everything. I'll be at the bar. We can talk more there.
Cheers. Thank you.
Sessionable.
Hey, everyone. It's Adrian here, letting you know that Sessionable is coming back to the Victorian High Country this June for the Darker Days Festival. So last year was pretty awesome, and this year it's set to be even bigger and better. Bright Brewery are building from the success of the inaugural festival and promise to bring you more of everything for Darker Days too. More dark beards, more food, more banter, more fire. And Dave's Travel and Events Group have upped the game to put together a huge 3-day tour with buses leaving from Sydney and Canberra. Not only will you get transport down to Bright and VIP access to the festival, but Dave's will also sort out your accommodation for both nights, treat you to a brewer's dinner on the Friday, and take you on a grand tour of the High Country Brewery Trail. And that's just some of what's included in this great package. It's going to be epic. I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope to see you all there. Seats are limited, so secure your spot now at daves.com.au.